Welcome back to Your Political Playlist. I'm your host, Emily Tisch Sussman. With a new presidential administration and new Congress, there's a significant amount of work to do cleaning up the mess Trump left behind and enacting new policies. Some ideas are new, and some were the policies debated throughout the 2020 presidential race that we discussed in season one. No matter where these policies originated, we are going to continue to be your trusted source as the ideas move forward. Every week, I'll be offering up bite-sized policy conversations from women who are leading the charge, either as elected officials, advocates, or policymakers. As always, all of our guests will be women. Today, I'll be talking with Anna Palmer, founder and CEO of Punchbowl News, to learn what happened during the first days of the Biden-Harris administration and make sense for us the impeachment round two. Anna is no stranger to Washington, having covered congressional leadership, presidential campaigns, and the politics of governing for more than 15 years. In 2019, she co-authored The Hill to Die On, The Battle for Congress and the Future of Trump's America, which was the inside story of Congress in the first 2 years of the Trump presidency.
Hey, Anna, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Good. Well, we're excited to hear about your new venture, Punchbowl News. So do you want to just, you're kind of breaking the mold on what news reporting looks like. So before we get into the substance of, what's going on the Hill, impeachment, tell us about Punchbowl.
Yeah, absolutely. So we launched, soft launched January 1st. And the basic premise is we want to cover power, people, politics in Washington. We do three newsletters a day, but really focused on the Capitol. And, the name is a Secret Service nickname for the Capitol. So power, but how it's connected, how the people in leadership are working with the White House, they're working with industry, what's going to get done, what isn't. Really kind of trying to be the truth tellers of, what's happening, less of kind of the traditional journalism, 1,000-word stories that are just pushing out to you.
I mean, three newsletters a day is so, sometimes I feel like I don't have the time to read all of your stories. How do you put out so much content? Can you just tell us what is your process like?
Yeah, listen, there's three of us that we've been working together for a long time. Jake and I did it, two newsletters a day for 4.5 years, which is a really long time to do that. But there's a lot happening, and there's a lot of palace intrigue and interesting different nuggets that I think we're able to draw out and draw kind of really substantive different reporting and thoughts about, which is our goal. You just kind of get through the day every day. It's amazing how your notebook fills up, and there's obviously always no shortage of me right now in particular, and certainly no shortage of things for us to cover. But we also are starting, I want to make sure to note, we are starting a podcast on Monday called The Daily Punch. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast. It's going to be Jake and myself kind of wrapping 10 minutes a day of the three things we're thinking about and, kind of the next iteration of what we had been doing for quite a while.
Cool. Well, welcome to the podcast game. Yes. The direct to the people conversations.
Exactly.
You started January 1st.
Yeah.
And 6 days later was the craziest thing. Anything can possibly imagine. And I was talking with one editor who was in the days afterwards saying to me that, Hill reporters are not embedded war reporters. So what was that like for you guys?
Yeah, I think we knew it was going to be a really busy time. You had the speaker vote, you had the Georgia election, you had Trump leaving office. So we wanted to make sure we didn't skip a beat and that people, that we're used to hearing from us would continue to hear from us. No one obviously predicted a siege on the Capitol. Two of my colleagues, both Jake and Brez, were in there. I live on the Hill, and so I was kind of command and control of our, quote unquote newsroom, as you call it, with this few people. And it was scary, and it remains to be scary. I was down there this weekend walking around, and it's really a police state. I think that there's reporters and members. I think it took several days for it to really even sink in what had happened. I always used to tell my mom, I worked 15 plus years on the Hill most days, and there'd be protests or things that were happening, and I'd say, don't worry, I work in the Capitol. It's the safest place to be. And that really was proven wrong. And so I think there's a lot of people stepping back thinking, who do you trust? Do we trust the police? Do we trust our fellow members? A lot of kind of that PTSD that's happening. And it's really hard because typically the Capitol has been such a kind of a haven in terms of old manners and things, kind of processes and respect and reverence.
Yeah, I think in general, people would kind of be surprised, even a year ago that for you guys writing your stories, like for journalists, you can really just walk up to the members. Like you could just walk right up and ask them questions. So, I mean, first with COVID and now with, you know, so much more security, how has that changed how you guys are putting your stories together?
Yeah, I mean, we always say, I think covering Congress and covering the news in the Capitol is the best place to cover it, right? Because you have so much access and you can walk up to people, you're in the building, there's places that are just for members and reporters that staff can't even go to. So that has really, the amount of access has been super limited in COVID. You know, it's mostly a ghost town. You know, a lot of members aren't even coming in for votes anymore. And those areas, the speaker's lobby, for example, which is that area for reporters and for, you know, members, has been shut down. So that is why I actually think it was so jarring, frankly, to see even, you know, that all of those people storm the Capitol, because it had been, you know, basically cops and a few reporters and members of leadership. There hadn't been tours going along. I mean, it wasn't as if this happened probably thankfully, in when there would have been so many more people at risk.
Okay, so leading up to this, obviously led us now into impeachment, which we are dying to get your perspective on. We had a question come in. We asked people for questions ahead of time, and we had a question, and anyone who's on with us can drop a question into the chat. We had a question come in, which I think is a great question for right now. Do you think that McConnell will vote to impeach Trump?
I do not. I think that farther away from the sticks we get, unless there is some new evidence that is really damning, I don't think you're going to see a mass number of Republican senators vote to convict him. I do think you'll see more, probably a handful or so of the likely suspects. We don't know where Mitch McConnell will be. I think that one of the signs of a reason why I don't think he will is I think there will be he'll have a real problem with the conference. There's a lot of senators who do not want this to go forward, that think it's a bad precedent, that for a lot of reasons are against it. And I think that he would have quite a few of his own Republican senators question his leadership if he does it.
Question his leadership. Strong, strong words. I mean, how do you feel like... Is this part of like the overhang of Trump and the Republican Party trying to sort out where they stand in relationship to Trump? Like, how much of a factor is the impeachment going to have in that?
I think it's huge. I think, listen, as much as there's an establishment Republicans, Mitt Romney certainly, but even Mitch McConnell has said, you know, he is basically through with this president, right? He was done with Donald Trump before he was even out of office, very frustrated with him, his wife, you know, kind of famously quit the cabinet after the siege.
She kind of quit. Like, well, she quit like the last day.
But I would say in terms of that, so when you think about that, though, just because they might be done with them, the rest of the Republican Party isn't, right? Look what happened in Arizona. Look what happened in terms of the House Republicans, with Liz Cheney likely be thrown out of leadership because she voted against, this president. And so I think on that sense, the president is the hangover. He's not leaving anytime soon. I think there's a lot of concern that if you go against him, for those members who are up in 2022, 2024, you could have a real problem on your hands.
So what dynamics are at play that those of us that are outside the Capitol, that are not there every day, like, what do you think that we're missing? Like, what are we not getting that you're seeing from being there on the ground?
That's a good question. I mean, I think a couple of things. I think one, it's going to be really interesting to see how Chuck Schumer handles himself. This is his first time in leadership, 40 years in Congress. It is a tough Democratic caucus that he is trying to wrangle, where you have the progressives that are pent up, want energy, want movement. This question of the filibuster, they were able to kind of handle it in the short term. I'm not sure that's going to be handled in the long term. So I think that is one of the things we focus so much on Trump, so much on impeachment, so much on Republicans and the future of that. Democrats are having their own kind of civil war, if not civil war, certainly division of what the future of the party should look like. And that, to me, is going to be one of the storylines of the first 2 years. Also, how Joe Biden handles that. Clearly not a massive progressive. And, you know, he's going to be pushed and pulled in a lot of different ways. So that, I think, to me, is one of the really interesting storylines. I also think AOC always fascinating. I think she's going to continue to be a real player. I think the potential for her to primary Schumer, also one of those things. Any move that Schumer makes is with that lens of understanding that she's watching, the progressives are watching.
Yeah, I mean, I am dying to stop talking about Trump. Like, I am dying to start talking about what laws could actually be passed, like what change can actually happen. I mean, even just of the executive actions that were signed on day one. Yesterday, Biden signed an executive order allowing trans service in the military, which is something I had worked on with the Pentagon 10 years ago, and we felt like wasn't even possible. So for the fact that he like walked in and signed it on day one was, I mean, I was crying. Like, I couldn't believe how much it had changed. And just the fact that we can actually make change for people. So how do you think that the dynamics on the Hill are going to impact Biden's agenda? Over the last couple of days, we've seen this emergence of like a center group, which actually really wasn't a factor during the Trump administration. So how are those dynamics evolving?
Yeah, we've been calling them the Sweet 16. I think they could have more sway. I'm usually very down on gangs in general. I think if they get a lot of oxygen in the press and they raise a lot of money, the problem solvers caucus, but I'm not quite certain they've solved any real problems yet.
Yeah, not really.
But I do think with the tight numbers, the sway of the middle could be much stronger. I think it's clearly where Biden feels much more comfortable governing from. But to your point, I think that it's going to be very difficult for this administration to get a lot of what they want done. I think that's why you see them doing these executive actions, because they know that even getting a COVID package done by mid-March, I think, is a stretch. It probably goes into April to do something bigger. And so it gets bogged down really quickly. So I think that that's what's going to be the real rub for this administration. Is there's so much pent up energy by the progressive side, by Democrats who've been in an all Republican kind of Washington, want action. And it's going to happen a lot slower, I think, particularly on things like, you know, immigration, things like that. I think it's really tough.
I mean, to your point about the pent up energy, so many of the members of Congress were elected in 2018. So like they've only served under Trump and they're like, oh, power, like, let's do something. Let's get something done.
So it's very true.
How do you think that lawmakers are feeling the pressure, like the urgency of what Americans, like how they are suffering and how they really do need support? Like, how do you think that's manifesting itself in the different factions in Congress?
Listen, I think that they're very sympathetic. I think when they went home over the holidays, there was a reason why they took action before that. That's often why they take action, because they know that they're about to face their constituents. But I do think there was skepticism, even among moderate Democrats, on the concept of doing a $2 trillion package. They just passed a big package. I think they want to see where that fits. But I do think that there's a realization that there's going to need to be some kind of economic stimulus. Infrastructure is one of those areas where you could see potentially some coming together of the parties to do something that spends a lot of money, to try to get the country back going. But clearly the pandemic is the hangover for this entire, you know, everybody's thinking about it. Everybody's impacted by it. I think the vaccine and how fast they can deploy is something everybody's watching closely.
So do you think that Biden's best legislative strategy is to try to keep all Democrats together, meaning keep the left together as well, especially with Bernie Sanders as the chair of the budget committee, like the chair of the budget committee? Or does he have a better chance of trying to get something that is towards the middle? Like, where are his numbers going to lie, and how's that going to impact the legislation he tries to push?
I mean, listen, I think time will tell right now. I'm skeptical of this bipartisan group. I don't think you're seeing Republicans give a lot, right? I mean, if they choose to do something very narrow, like, you know, some vaccine things, a couple of different things, sure, maybe you could try to find some room there. But when they're already talking about reconciliation, I mean, make no bones about it. Reconciliation is a vehicle for a partisan bill to get passed. It just is. And so like when Jen Psaki's up on the podium saying, you know, kind of not necessarily acknowledging that, like that's basically when you've said, okay, bipartisanship isn't going to work and we're going to move through this vehicle. So that I think will be the test for them in the beginning. Do they go through reconciliation or not?
Well, how do you think then Republicans feel like they get cover to be able to vote on something to push through? Like clearly they had no problem pushing through money and some variety of programs when Trump was president. So like, how do they get that cover under a Biden administration if they feel like they need it?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think Republicans are returning to a lot of what they said pre-Trump. Trump didn't care about deficits and spending, and that was not a traditional Republican talking point. And so now I think you're going to see a return to some of that previous kind of sentiment around spending.
But does that mean like nothing? Like how do they pass any programs basically?
We'll see. I think that Republicans are skeptical of a lot of government intervention and have been for a really long time. So I don't think that's going to change.
It'll definitely be very interesting to see how it plays out. I'm so ready to be done talking about Trump, but I do just need to know, you know, as we get into like legislation, actual bills, actually getting money to people, how much of an impact do you think the impeachment is going to have to set up being able to talk about COVID relief packages?
You know, this is probably going to be a very unpopular answer with the people who are watching this and maybe even to you, but I think that the American public's attention moves very, very fast right now. I don't anticipate that we're talking about impeachment 2 months from now. I think we'll talk about it now, and I think it will move forward fairly fast. I think whether Democrats try to hang on to the reason why COVID relief needs to happen or vaccine stuff needs to happen, we'll see if it's a salient talking point with the American public. I'm not quite sure that will be the reason. I think people in economic distress, the fact that they don't want to be, you know, get evicted from their homes, the fact that they can't pay for food. I mean, those are to me a lot more tangible than Democrats don't like this president because he did this. And I'm not saying what he did was right. I'm not saying at all. What the president did, I mean, I think for all purpose, intents and purposes, was not appropriate. But I just don't think impeachment is the, just like impeachment didn't play in this last re-election, I have a hard time seeing it play a second time around.
Well, that's actually what I was going to say, is I know that 2020 is like the longest year, you know, the decade of 2020, but we may actually remember that impeachment number one actually was in 2020, and then it was a zero topic in the president's reelection, which is shocking if you look at that as a fact. Well, thank you so much, Anna Palmer, CEO of Punchbowl News. New podcast coming out. Excited for you. Good to talk to you. Thanks so much.
All right, take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Your Political Playlist. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Your Political Playlist, where you can see video of our interviews and join us live to ask questions during future ones. For more from Anna Palmer, follow her on Twitter and Instagram at Punchbowl News. Join us every week for smart but bite-sized policy conversations with women at the seat of power and activism. Subscribe if you like us, leave us a rating and comment to let others know. Talk to you next time.